Hare Krishna. Today we come to the conclusion of the Ishvopanishad study. We'll discuss the 18th mantra. And before that, we will just have a quick overview of the Ishvopanishad to see how we have traced the journey. And then we will recap this at the end again. So, let's look at the Ishvopanishad. Basically, it has 5 broad sections. In the first section, the message is we should live in harmony with the Ishvara. In the second section, we are told that we have to develop spiritual vision to understand that Ishvara. And then the subsequent is explaining how to develop that spiritual vision. First is we have to have the right Vidya, then we have to do the right Upasana, and then we have to do the right Yachana. The last 4 mantras are prayers. So in this last section, the first 2 mantras were more or less, first mantra was clearly, please take me from the impersonal effulgence to the personal Lord, personal Supreme. And then after that were prayers asking for the removal of the obstacles in the devotional path. So the last mantra is also a similar prayer. Agnenaya suptaraya asman vishwani deve vayunani vidvan yodhyasma juhurana ameno vishtham tenama uktim vidhena. So the Lord is glorified with various epithets, Agne. So, you are, O Lord, are as powerful as fire. He says, fire can burn everything. You can burn all the impurities within my heart. Nay means to take me. Kindly lead me. Leja. Supata. Patha is path. Supata is the right path. Agne nay supata. Raya asman. So, all of us. So it's not a prayer just for myself. It's a prayer on behalf of all living beings. Please take me to you, path for reaching you, Vishwani Deva Vayunani Vidwan. All of us, Vayunani Vidwan, you are aware of all my actions, O Lord. Yodhi Asmaj Juhurana Amino. So, Ena, all these obstacles that are there, Yodhi, please remove them. All hindrances, Juhurana, Bhuishtham Te Nama Uktim Vidhema. Bhuishtham means again and again in front of you, Nama Uktim. I offer words of obeisances to you. So the paraphrase is, O Lord, who are like fire, you know all my actions. Please kindly lead me on the right path. Whatever obstacles are there, please remove them. I offer my obeisances to you. Let us look at Srila Prabhupada's translation. O my Lord, as powerful as fire, O omnipotent one, now I offer you all obeisances. Prabhupada says, Nama uktim vidhema bhuishtham. Prabhupada translates as, all obeisance, falling on the ground at your feet. O my Lord, please lead me on the right path to reach you. And since you know all that I have done in the past, please free me from the reactions to my sins, so that there will be no hindrance to my progress. So it's a prayer not just for maintenance of oneself in this world. Most people feel that the purpose of God's existence is to help me in this world. Which is true, God is ready to help us in this world also. But ultimately God wants to take us out of this world, back to Him. So, many prayers are, God provide me the things that I need here. But here, the prayer is different. It is, O God, I want to come back to you and please remove the obstacles from this path. So it's a spiritually evolved prayer. And it's a prayer which is very much devotional in its mood and content. Let us look at Srila Prabhupada's purport. So in the first paragraph, Srila Prabhupada explains how obstacles in the spiritual path originate. And then one has to overcome these obstacles and thereafter achieve perfection. So for achieving perfection, there is a gradual way and there is a quick way. So Srila Prabhupada outlines both those ways. And then, after recommending the quick way, Srila Prabhupada explains that how that quick way on the devotional on the path of devotional service is facilitated by the omnipotence of the Lord. How the omnipotent Lord guides a devotee. So let's look at this. Srila Prabhupada writes that actually, the Lord is addressed as fire because He can burn anything into ashes, including the sins of the surrendered soul. But now, when we are practicing spiritual life, our past reactions, they come upon us to cause us misery. They cause us misery in two ways. One is external, as the problems that we face in our life. We may get sick, we may lose our job, we may have some problems in society where we are living, and we may even have to leave from that place at some time. We may have to relocate because of certain situations. So all these are external problems. Along with that, we may also get internal problems. Our own lust, anger, greed, envy, pride, illusion, these may rise up. And they may drag us away from Krishna. These are also sinful reactions. So our sinful reactions there's a physical reaction to sinful actions, and there's a psychological reaction. The physical reaction often comes as external problems. Psychological reaction comes as internal problems. Now, we often see the physical reactions in others' lives, but we don't see the psychological reactions in their lives, unless they become expressed through physical changes of behavior. And that is why we often feel that I alone am struggling. I have so many conditionings to fight with. Other devotees seem to be so happily practicing devotional service. You know, why is devotional service such a struggle for me alone? It's not for me alone. All of us are in the same boat. The waves of conditionings come and hit everybody who is in the boat. And whoever is in that boat will get shaken. Similarly, the waves of past conditionings hit all of us. We are in the boat of material existence. We all have a material mind. And all of us will be affected. But often, the passions and thoughts that go on in the mind are not expressed till one actually is unable to control them. That means they get expressed physically and then they come out. So then we may see that a person may have lust, anger, greed inside, and that may be tormenting the person. But when that is expressed, then we may call that as a slip or a fall. A slip is just like when a person is walking, and there's a slight slip. So slip, the person is almost like falling, but then the person restores the balance. Or a fall means the person just completely sprawls on the ground. The fall. So like that, we may all have slips and falls in our spiritual life. When there are slips and falls, these are because of the past conditionings taking control. Or rather, we letting the past conditionings take control. No one can blame the past conditionings for the present fall. Why is that? Because blaming the past conditionings for a fall is like blaming gravity for the sinking of a ship. If a ship or a boat sinks in an ocean, is gravity responsible for the sinking? We can say yes. But gravity is there for all the boats that are going in the ocean. It is not that gravity has some vendetta against a particular boat and gravity causes sinking of that boat alone. No, gravity is there for all boats. It's pulling all the boats down. But if the boat is managed carefully, then the boat will not sink. So gravity, we could say, is responsible for the sinking of a boat. But gravity is the ultimate cause. There is an immediate cause. Gravity is a common cause that is there for everyone, not the ultimate cause. Ultimately, the ultimate cause for everything is Krishna. So it is not that Krishna causes the fall down of anyone. It is there are laws of material nature, and if we don't follow the laws, or if we don't do the necessary things to protect ourselves from the laws, then we will fall. So if there is a hole in the boat, and then because of that, water comes in and the boat sinks, we can't blame gravity for the sinking of the boat. Who has to be blamed? The person who caused the hole or the person who let the hole stay. So similarly, we can never blame our conditionings for our faults. The process of devotional service is like a boat. And we are in the material ocean, and in the material ocean, we will be dragged down by our conditionings. But once we are situated in the boat of devotional service, then in that boat, we are safe. In that boat, we are safe. The Bhagavad Gita says that the boat of transcendental knowledge is so potent, so wonderful, that no matter how sinful a person may be, in that person can cross over the ocean. He says that avichetasi papebhya sarvebhya papakrittamaha sarvam jnana plavenaiva vrijinam santarishyasi. So in 4.36 Krishna says avichetasi papebhya, no matter how sinful a person be, sarvebhya papakrittamaha, even that person is the most sinful of all sinners, sarvam jnana plavenaiva. The person just situates himself in the plava is boat of knowledge. The spiritual knowledge culminates in devotional service. Spiritual knowledge is, the best of spiritual knowledge is Rajavidya, as Krishna tells in 9.2. So, once a person is situated in the boat of transcendental knowledge, then Vrijinam Santarishyasi, one will be able to cross over the ocean of miseries, the ocean of material existence which is filled with miseries. So, the boat is competent enough to take us across. And once we are in the boat, gravity can't pull us down unless we make a mess while we are in the boat. If we jump out of the boat, or we make a hole in the boat, or we start shaking the boat, we don't carefully navigate the boat. There are various ways. One is that I just jump out of the boat. Another is that I create a hole in the boat. Another is in the wave, there might be ocean, in the ocean there might be giant waves coming. And instead of navigating carefully, I just take the boat into a storm. And then the wave just, it just overturns the boat. So what are we referring to in these situations? The first is, we just give up the process of devotional service and go away. That's like jumping out of the boat. Then we fall back into the ocean, we are dragged. Another is that while practicing devotional service, we privately, secretly keep indulging in sinful activities. That's like creating holes in the boat. And we go right into a storm. That's like going into a tempting situation, even when we know we are practicing devotional service, but within the purview of practicing devotional service, we still go into tempting situations which we know are dangerous for us. So, then what happens is, although we are practicing devotional service, the boat is strong. But we may not, just because the boat is strong doesn't mean that we can go into a storm and still survive. Actually, we have to be intelligent. If the storm comes of its own accord, and we have to take shelter of Krishna, and he will protect us. But if we ourselves go into a storm, that means we carelessly go into a tempting situation where we know that we are likely to get provoked, then it's quite likely that we'll fall off. That the boat will overturn and we'll fall back. So in all these situations, gravity can't be blamed. It is we who need to take the responsibility. Therefore, the important point is that we have a process that can protect us. And the obstacles will come because of our past sinful reactions. When these obstacles come, at that time, how do we deal with them? We deal with them by taking greater shelter of Krishna. So we are not alone in the boat. Krishna is there in the form of the spiritual master. And the spiritual master is there through his other representatives also. There is Guru, Sadhu, Shastra. So when the storms start coming, then at that time we have to take shelter of Guru, Sadhu, Shastra, pray to Krishna, connect with the Chaitya Guru within, the Super Soul, and learn how to deal with the situation. Otherwise, we will be overcome by the conditionings. But when we are overcome, it is not that we are just passive victims. No, we are also responsible. Because those conditionings cannot overcome us unless we consent. Actually, when the mind presents temptations, the mind can only propose. It cannot impose. Mind can say, do this, do that, do this, do that. But ultimately, it is we who choose to do that. So, the ultimate responsibility is ours. Now, Srila Prabhupada explains in the purport that actually, when we do this kind of vikarma, so this last sentence in the purport, first paragraph, such vikarma is enacted by the illusion living entity simply for sense gratification. And thus such activities become hindrances on the spiritual path. Hindrances, they obstruct us. Just like the waves, the holes, the waves in the ocean, the holes in the boat, they all obstruct the boat in moving forward. Then Srila Prabhupada explains that, now how does one overcome all this? There are two ways. One is the gradual way and one is the rapid way. So what is the gradual way? Gradual way is that one starts cultivating Brahminical culture. So one is born in a society where there is overall spiritual orientation and one starts developing good qualities. So Srila Prabhupada here is talking about the process of gradual purification, which he will elaborate in the first one verse of Nectar of Instruction also, which we'll discuss in our future classes. Essentially, the gradual process involves striving vigorously to cultivate various qualities. Prabhupada talks about tapasa brahmacharena shamena cha damena cha tyagena satya saucha abhyam yamena niyamena vasu. It's a long list. So one practices tapasya, one does brahmacharya, one follows rules, one keeps cleanliness, and by all these one tries to become purified. This is important, but this is the gradual way. So however, this gradual way is difficult because it may take a long, long time. The quick way is to take shelter of Krishna, is to connect with the spiritual master and with the help of the spiritual master learn the process of devotional service. So once we learn the process of devotional service, then by the mercy of Krishna we become purified much faster than by our own efforts to cultivate good qualities. So the Bhagavatam gives the example that trying to remove material desires and material contaminations from our consciousness is like trying to remove fog. Now fog is all around and fog makes it very difficult for us to see. But then what do we do with the fog? We can't just blow air at the fog. We can't catch the fog and try to throw it aside. You know, even if I take a flashlight and try to see through the fog, we'll be able to see a little distance. But if the sun rises, then what happens is the fog just dissipates. So similarly, agham dhunvanti karsnena niharam iva bhaskaraha. We describe that when we develop devotion to Lord Vishnu and chant his holy names, that why agham dhunvanti karsnena. Agham is sins. Aghasur was a sinful demon. So agham dhunvanti, they all become cleansed. Karsnena, completely. Niharam iva bhaskaraha. Just as fog is removed by the rising of the Bhaskara. So the quick way is to invoke the presence of the Lord in our heart. The long, gradual way is that we consciously try to cultivate good qualities. The quick way is we rapidly try to invoke the presence of the Lord in our heart. And either way, the goal is to become purified. The goal is to manifest the godliness within. But the quicker way, because it relies more on the strength of the Lord, and not just on our own strength, it is easier, it is more effective. Now what all does this involve? Let's look at it now. So Srila Prabhupada talks about how a person may fall in one's spiritual life if one is not careful. Let's look at this. This is an important point to understand. So there are three trajectories that we can see in this. So if one practices akarma, that is devotional service, then by akarma one can have rapid elevation. By practicing devotional service, by the mercy of Krishna, it's like an elevator which takes us up swiftly. Another way is the path of karma. Here karma means karmakanda. So karmakanda gradually purifies us, we follow the rules and regulations, and by that we go to heavens. It's a slow way up. It takes a long, long time to eventually become liberated. Bahunam janmanamante. And that is also one way for elevation. Now, apart from that, there is vikarma. Vikarma is sinful activity. And vikarma takes us down. So, adhogacchanti tamasaha, Krishna describes in the 14th chapter, that by practicing vikarma, one becomes degraded and one goes to the lower direction, lower species, lower planets, like that. So now among these, today if we see, most people are engaged in vikarma. we often use the word karmis to refer to materialistic non-devotees. The word karmi has a very negative connotation within devotee circles currently, but actually the word karmi in the Vedic context has a positive connotation. It's a karma kandi. Today materialistic people are not karmis, they are all actually vikarmis. So of course we shouldn't talk in a negative way towards anyone. Our goal is not to laugh at people, our goal is to laugh with people. Laugh at people means we think, I am so superior, you are so fallen, ha 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 ha. Not laugh at people. Laugh with people means we elevate them and bring them to Krishna consciousness, and then we chant and dance in kirtan, we laugh with them. Not that laugh with people means we go down to their level and we do sinful activities with them and laugh with them, not that. But our goal is we should not be contemptful of anyone. If we are morally and spiritually in a better situation than others, that's because Krishna has given us His mercy. It's not that we deserved anything. It's Krishna causelessly given His mercy to us. You know, if devotees had been the way we are, if we are laughing contemptuously at karmis, if devotees had been laughing at us like that, then how would we have got the opportunity to become devotees? So therefore, our goal is not to laugh at others. Our goal is to laugh with others by elevating them to devotional service. So we use the word karma in a negative sense. So yes, we want to differentiate ourselves from karmis. We don't want to become materialistic, but that doesn't mean that we should look down upon materialistic people. We have to understand that they are also souls, they are also dear to Krishna, and if we have the capacity, we try to get them towards Krishna. But at the same time, we don't want to get dragged away. So we have to have some level of protection for our bhakti, but in protecting our bhakti, we shouldn't develop a sense of moral superiority by which we look down upon others. Because the more we look down upon others, the less we can actually help them. Because even if we say, I want to help you, but when we are looking down at others, nobody wants to feel looked down. And when people feel devalued in this way, then they just think of us as religious fanatics who imagine themselves to be morally superior. And then they're not attracted to devotees at all. Although Krishna consciousness is very attractive, it's joyful, but it has to be presented in a way that is respectful. And we have the example of Prabhupada answers, he says, I take a blade of grass in my mouth and I fall at your feet. You are a great person. Please take shelter of the mercy of Lord Chaitanya. So, our current discussion focuses on akarma, karma and vikarma. So today most people are engaged in vikarma. We ourselves have engaged in vikarma in the past. And who knows, we might be struggling with some vikarma even today. We might be engaging in it while practicing bhakti also. Then there is karma. We are doing some moral, religious activities for our bodily maintenance. We are doing our worldly professions. And then there is, that means these are moral and legal, that's karma. And then there is bhakti which we are practicing, that is akarma. Now, a devotee is familial, social, professional, physical activities. Are all of them also akarma? Or are they karma? Or are they vikarma? Actually, it will depend on the devotee's consciousness. If the devotee's whole life is oriented towards serving Krishna, then whatever else is done, that is just contributing to that purpose. The devotee is working, the devotee considers the home to be a temple. And even the devotee is working in a company, the devotee considers that work as just a means to glorify the Lord in his house and to serve those who are the servants of the Lord in the house. So if one's consciousness is of service, then the other activities also become devotional service. If one gives charity, one does devotional service, sadhana properly, then other activities also get spiritualized. Now vikarma in terms of breaking the four related principles, we strictly avoid. But some other vikarma that is there, we will not be able to avoid, because this world is after all a contaminated place. Krishna gives the example that just as fire is covered by smoke, similarly, in this world, we cannot avoid some contaminations. So the important point is that the devotee keeps avoiding vikarma as much as possible. And even the karma that the devotee is doing, the moral, religious, spiritual, moral, religious, ethical responsibility that are there, the devotee tries to spiritualize them as much as possible. And in this way, we become elevated. So when we practice akarma and we get elevated, then even on this rapid path, we face challenges. What are the challenges? Challenges are, it may appear sometimes that a devotee falls down. So Bhaktivinoda Thakur explains that actually when a devotee falls, we have to understand what exactly is happening. There are these three activities, akarma, karma and vikarma. So now, earlier the devotee's karma might have been vikarma. That means the devotee might be engaged in some profession that involves some immoral activities, some anti-spiritual activities, some sinful activities. And the devotee might have been habituated to doing that. Now the devotee is trying to become spiritual. So now instead of considering these three categories, let's consider these two as two categories. That means one is the devotional activity, spiritual activity for our purification, and the other is our material activities for our bodily maintenance and our engagement with society, whatever we have. So now these two, some of it may be inevitably sinful, some of it may be conscientiously moral, and some of it may be in between. Sometimes some things are very exemplary moral, some things are sinful. So that means these two are like a spectrum over here. But it's like this is spiritual, both of these are material. So now when we are doing both of these, at this time, when you are doing these material activities, the real challenge is that during doing these activities, one may be dragged down towards sin. Because both are material activities, there is karma and there is vikarma. While doing karma, one may fall to vikarma. So Bhaktivinoda Thakur explains that while doing worldly activities, a devotee may sometimes get dragged to sin. And how does such a devotee become protected then? Just by the practice of devotional service. By the practice of devotional service, one gets strength, one gets determination, one gets intelligence. And by that, one can pull oneself out of the traps into which the world tempts a person. So till one has become strong enough in devotional service, sometimes there will be occasional relapses into sin that may happen. So if a devotee is steadily practicing devotional service, then those relapses should be overlooked. And the devotee should be encouraged to continue practicing devotional service. So let's look at this further now. So now Srila Prabhupada gives a very fascinating understanding of the omnipotence of the Lord. So normally we think of the omnipotence of the Lord can create mountains and he can lift mountains, the Lord can lift planets, he can float everything. But so Prabhupada explains, what is the omnipotence of the Lord? Such is the omnipotence of the Lord, he can make a man born in a Brahmana family as degraded as a low-born dog-eater. And he can also make a low-born dog-eater superior to a qualified Brahmana simply on the strength of devotional service. So here Srila Prabhupada is talking about the omnipotence of the Lord, not in terms of the physical or material feats of action that the Lord may do. He's talking in terms of the transformation of the heart that he can bring about. So even a very low-born person, by the power of bhakti, that person can become very, very elevated and exalted. How does that happen? Because Krishna is lifting that person up. You remember we discussed yesterday about how, last time about how there is a rope, a person is in a well and there's a rope. But now the person outside who's holding the rope pulls out the rope and the person below is holding, then the person below can swoop in a few minutes only come out entirely of the rope, entirely out of the well by the pull of the person outside. But similarly, we may be very, very degraded. If we just hold on to the rope of devotional service, we become amazed. Oh, how much pure I have become. So have we actually become pure? Yes, we have become pure. But what has made us pure is not our own strength or determination. It is Krishna's grace. Even if I have almost fully come out of the well, but at that time I let go of the rope, then what will happen? Gravity still exists. You know, whether I am at the bottom of the rope or at the top of the rope, gravity still exists. If I let go of the rope, if I don't do my job, gravity will do its job. And gravity's job is, it will drag me down. So, rather than blaming, I was practicing devotional service for so long and I thought I had made so much advancement, how did I fall back? No, actually, our job is to constantly keep practicing devotional service. Yato yato nishchalati manaschanchalam asthiram tatastatoniyam yaitat atmaniyeva vashamnayet. Krishna describes in 6.26, wherever and whenever the mind wanders, bring it back under control. That's his expectation from us. The mind will wander, bring it back. So we will make advancement by this. But even if we are advanced, if we let go of the rope, then we will fall back. So the omnipotence of the Lord, Prabhupada explained two ways, that the Lord is so powerful that even a person who is at the bottom of the lake, the Lord can just pull that person out. So like that, even if a person is very degraded, in the Vedic culture, a dog eater, Shvapacha, is considered to be a very low class person, because dog itself is considered to be not a very low class animal, and eating the dog, eating any kind of flesh is frowned upon, but dog flesh is considered to be also abominable. So therefore dog eater is considered to be a low class person. So the idea is not a casteist value judgment, but the dog eating is indicative of the mentality of a person, because the person's consciousness is low down. So therefore that person eats such things. So that person can become saintly. Why? Because that is the omnipotence of the Lord. Now, how is it that Srila Prabhupada says he can make a man born in a Brahmana family as degraded as a lowborn dog eater? Does the Lord want to make somebody degraded? Does the Lord want somebody to fall down? Why is Prabhupada saying that he can make? Is it the Lord who makes somebody like that? Actually, Lord doesn't deliberately make anyone fall. But the Lord illustrates the powers that are there in material nature. So ultimately, even Maya Shakti is Krishna Shakti. And when Maya pulls a person down, Maya is also acting by Krishna's energy only. So Maya's energy is also Krishna's energy. And what Srila Prabhupada wants to illustrate over here is that even if a Brahmana is saintly, that saintliness doesn't come just by the independent endeavor of that Brahmana. That has come by the grace of the Lord. Even if a person has come from the bottom of the well to the top of the well, that doesn't mean that the person is independently situated at the top of the well. As soon as the person loosens the hand on the rope, the person falls down. So, similarly, in Vedic society, a Brahmana is considered to be very elevated. But at the same time, the Brahmana does not practice dharma, loosens the hand on the rope of the mercy of the Lord, the rope of devotional service, the rope of dharma, then that even Brahmana will fall. And that also illustrates the power of the Lord, because it is Maya that makes the person fall, and Maya is also the energy of Krishna. So sometimes when our mind troubles us too much, we may feel, this mind is so terrible, the mind is not allowing me to serve Krishna. What should I do? The Bhagavatam 11th canto in the Avanti Brahman section says that the God-like power of the mind. The mind's power is God-like. The mind is extremely powerful as compared to us at present. The mind appears much, much more powerful. And the only way the God-like power of the mind can be curbed is by taking shelter of a being who is not just God-like, who is God. That is the Supreme Lord. So the mind's power is also a reflection of God's power. Because ultimately Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita, Indriyanam Manasyasmi, that among the senses, I am the mind. So for a devotee, you know, when a person becomes purified and elevated, that increases the faith in the devotee's heart. We see sometimes devotees from various backgrounds, which might have been very contaminated, they come forward and they start practicing Krishna consciousness, they chant, dancing and become committed to Krishna's mission. We feel very heartened by that. Bhakti is so wonderful and it's so powerful that people all over the world are getting purified. But sometimes we may see some senior devotees having problems and they may slip or fall from their standard, and that can disturb us. If bhakti is so powerful, then how can such a person fall? So actually, if a person falls, that should also increase our faith in the power of bhakti. Why? Because what it indicates is no matter how big a person may be, that person's bigness is not independent of the power of bhakti. That if a person gives up the shelter of bhakti, gives up the shelter of Krishna, then no matter how elevated a person may be, that person will also fall. So, if we see a person who has gone to 20th floor using a lift, this lift can take a person right up to 20th floor. Say there's a 20 floor building or 200 floor building, a person got 200 floor. Now, if a person has gone to 200 floor, but the person jumps out of the lift at that time, then what is going to happen? Gravity will take over and gravity will cause the person to fall. So now, just because the person is on 200th floor doesn't mean there's no gravity pull. It's only when we go out of the Earth's gravitational pull, then even if the person comes out, the person will be able to float in space, will not be dragged down. So we shouldn't assume that we or any other devotees in that place where they are beyond the gravity pull of material desires. Certainly we shouldn't think about that for ourselves. So then we will not be dragged down by the gravity pull, but we'll stay up as long as we stay in the lift, or as long as we hold on to the boat, to the rope. So this is the omnipotence. So for a devotee, the fall of even senior devotees, what it proves is, if sometimes such a thing unfortunately happens, it proves the potency of devotional service. We will find out if we inquire, investigate, that that devotee must have done something wrong. Some limb of devotional service did not practice properly, and because of which the problems came up. So that means the problem is not the potency of devotional service, the problem is the carelessness in tapping the potency of devotional service. It is the negligence in practicing devotional service attentively. So now, that Lord with all His omnipotence is situated in our heart, and from our heart He is ready to use all His omnipotence to purify us and to free us from material existence. Let's look at this now. So the omnipotence of the Lord means what? We should have more faith in His ability than doubt about our own inability. What does this mean? We understand that I have my disqualifications. Now, I have lust, I have anger, I have greed, all these things. And because of that, I have my doubts about whether I can practice devotional service or not. But the omnipotence of the Lord means, whatever be my limitations, Krishna's strength is greater than my limitations. And if we are too self-conscious, conscious always of, oh, I have this conditioning, I have that conditioning, I have that conditioning, how will I practice devotional service? That's how we'll stay trapped now. But if we practice diligently, knowing that ultimately Krishna is omnipotent and He will help me if I just try to serve Him sincerely, then that will shift our focus from our own limitations to Krishna. And once we are fixed on Krishna, then just thinking of Krishna, trying to serve Krishna, trying to love Krishna, all that lifts us up, all that gives us strength. So to tap the omnipotence of the Lord, we need to have more faith in His ability than doubt about our own inability. So we are disqualified, we are unable, but that is because we are trying alone. When we try with Krishna, then we can succeed. So now when we fight the battle against anarthas, Prabhupada explains that the devotee who is fighting is actually helped by the Lord. So swapada moolam bhajita priyasya tyaktanya bhavasya hari paresha vikarmaya chotiktam kathanchit dhunoti sarpam hrdi sannivishtam. So Prabhupada explains that swapada moolam, the Lord is situated in the heart, and when he sees that somebody is worshipping my lotus feet, bhajitaha priyasya, this person is lovingly serving the Lord. At that time what happens? Priyasya can refer to the devotee is thinking that the Lord is priya, and priyasya can also refer to the Lord thinking my devotees are very priya to me. And how is the devotee serving? Tyakta anya bhavasya hari paresha. This sadhaka gives up everything else. Tyakta anya bhavasya. Giving all other inclinations, hari paresha. Such a person serves Lord Hari determinedly. And then kathanchit, somehow, occasionally, vikarmaya chotpatitam. This such a person falls, patitam, falls to what? Vikarma, to bad activity. Then, dhunoti sarvam ridhisannivishtaha. The Lord is seated right next to the person in the heart, and the Lord will do dhunoti. The Lord will remove the impurities. And how? Sarvam. All the impurities will be removed. So what is required? Tyakta anya bhavasya hari paresha. One gives up other bhavas, one gives other inclinations and tries to serve Krishna diligently. So therefore, these sort of verses should give us faith that Krishna wants to help us. Krishna, as we discussed earlier, He is present in our heart not to catch us but to coach us. He wants to help us grow. So when we fight a battle against anarthas, we will go through these four stages. And understanding this is analytically helps us to understand where we are situated and how we can move forward. So the first stage is helpless defeat. We try to fight with our conditionings and we actually don't even try. When we are told that we have to fight, no meat eating, no gambling, no intoxication, no illicit sex, you say, no Krishna consciousness only. Forget it. So we feel it's impossible to live without these things at the first stage when we are helplessly defeated. Even now when we are practicing sadhakas, there may be some conditionings in which we are helplessly defeated. Just feel it's not possible to fight against them. Then there is struggle and defeat. That means the devotee decides that actually I'm not going to fall for this. I will fight determinedly. And the devotee makes resolutions, prays, chants. And then when the temptation comes, the devotee struggles, fights, but somehow the devotee falls for it. So this is struggle and defeat. Here this is definitely better than the earlier stage because one is at least putting up a fight. One is not succumbing to temptations passively. So one is certainly not delighting in those temptations. At least those sinful temptations that are there. Struggle and defeat is one level. Then there is struggle and success. So here one thinks, okay, what is my goal? My goal is not to enjoy these worldly things. My goal is to go back to Krishna. So whatever is required for my achieving my goal, I will do that. Come what may. So here also struggle is there, but overall gradually a person moves to success. So in general in our spiritual life, we oscillate between stages 2 and 3. Most devotees who start practicing devotional service in a few years, they become strong enough to give up the gross sinful activities. So at least with respect to regulative principles at a gross level, one doesn't have to face the prospect of helpless defeat. But one does face the struggle in face the challenge in the next two stages. One struggles but is defeated. One struggles and is sometimes succeeded. So how can we move from the second stage to the third stage? Before that, let's look at the fourth stage. The fourth stage is effortless success. That means at this stage, a devotee has just lost the inclination for the temptation. So all of us may have some temptations which drag us presently. But the more we become purified, the more the dragging stops. Because we get an inner drag, the inner call of the Lord towards Krishna. And we cannot but fall in love with the Lord who is calling us from within. We cannot but not think about devotional service and practice devotional service. When we start practicing devotional service in this way, then we slowly move from struggle and defeat to struggle and success. And then beyond that, the last stage is effortless success. So struggle and success means we feel that, oh, I'll not be able to do this. What should I do? We call devotees and we are unsteady about the whole thing. Should I do this? Or should I do that? Or should I do nothing about it? Should I just wait? But then eventually when we make a decision, then after that, we focus on trying to apply that decision. And when we try to apply that decision, Krishna sends help to us. Krishna's help may come in the form of books. Krishna's help may come in the form of devotees, it may come in the form of deities, it may come in the form of the holy name, it may come in the form of dhams, it may come in the form of the spiritual master, the counselor, and of course it may come in the form of the Chaitya Guru. Whatever form Krishna's help comes, we are grateful to that help. And we try to learn from that help, incorporate it in our life, and try to improve ourselves. In this way, the adventure in a devotee's life is the adventure of continuous self-improvement. The adventure need not be external, although many devotees have adventures external lives also. But in general, the real excitement, the real magic of a devotee's life is in the heart, in the purification that takes place, in the gradual control and conquest of the anarthas that happens. So now what takes a person through these four stages? It is devotional nourishment. As long as we are nourishing ourselves devotionally, we are moving forward, we are moving upward, we are moving closer to Krishna. So imagine that there are two people fighting and one of these is much stronger, the other is weaker. So there is lust and we ourselves. So when there's temptation that comes, initially when we decide to confront, initially we are actually like a Kadi Palwan. That means a very weakling sort of person. And lust is like a powerful bodybuilder. So when there is a confrontation between that, lust just sweeps us aside and pushes us aside, brushes us aside, knocking us down with a single punch, knockout. So what happens is that is the stage of helpless defeat. But this person who is a weakling, that person exercises regularly, that person eats properly, person also develops strength. So like that, when we are practicing devotional service, we may all be in some anarthas in the case of helpless defeat. But if we keep practicing every day, our hearing and chanting is like the food for the soul. And this food makes us stronger. And the stronger we become, the more likely our chances to overcome our conditionings and to win the war against those conditionings. So first we'll go to struggle and defeat, and then we'll come to struggle and success. So what is the key? Again, it is spiritual nourishment. So we get spiritual nourishment regularly by chanting Hare Krishna and practicing devotional service, by rendering to Sri Srila Prabhupada and to his disciples the best service that we can. And slowly we get nourished, we move forward. And from struggle and defeat, we move to struggle and success. And finally there is effortless success. Effortless success means we don't feel any temptation at all. I give the example often that we might be eating meat earlier, but very few devotees have to struggle with the regulative principle of no meat eating. Even when a person is going in a train or a plane and the neighbor is taking meat, it's not that devotees have to. Very few devotees may have to struggle with their tongue. Oh, I want to eat that. No, I will not eat that. Just the resolve is there. Okay, I won't take. Prasad is what I will take. These things I will not indulge in. That's what I have decided at the time of practicing Krishna consciousness seriously. And I'm going to keep that. So that way, we don't succumb to our conditionings because that commitment is there. So now practicing at the fourth level is not necessarily joyful. It is just painful in one way. Because whenever anything promises enjoyment and then we say no to it, the essential problem that happens is we have said no to our pleasure-giving nature. And when we say no to our pleasure-giving nature, that nature becomes even more hungry and demands pleasure. But the process of bhakti is not about saying no to the pleasure-giving nature. It is about saying yes, but in a more enlightened way. Yes, we want pleasure, we can get pleasure, but by loving and serving Krishna. And for loving and serving Krishna, we need humility. So, we slowly move forward up these levels. So, rather than feeling discouraged that we are at a lower stage, we should simply understand which state I am at and see whether I can come to the level of effortless success and then take up that process so that gradually we rise upwards and upwards. This is the battle against the anartha which each one of us has to fight. Now, when we fight this battle, we shouldn't stop the nourishment. If we stop the nourishment, and even if we want, we'll not be able to continue. We'll become weak. So the important point is, never give up. Why never give up? Because now, in the process of devotional service, we give up because we feel we can't succeed. Well, why waste my energy? But in Krishna, in the spiritual life, when we are practicing devotional service, we are always having the opportunity to practice devotional service at all times. No matter what we do, Krishna is always there in our heart and Krishna always gives us the opportunities. We never lose till we lose hope. It's only when we decide, I can't do it. And we ourselves put aside the sword. There is a sword in which, using which we can win against any enemy. We have an invincible, indefeatable sword with us, undefeatable sword with us. But if we only put aside the sword, then what happens? And we start thinking, yeah, I'm in this battlefield. This sword, it is so heavy. My dear hand, it has got so tired now. How long can I hold this sword? I need to take care of my hand. You know, I just put this sword down. It's such a heavy burden. I put the heart down and what happens? I was just trying to take care of the muscles of the hand. But then the enemy comes, tack, chops off the hand only. So, actually speaking, if a warrior thinks that a weapon is a burden, then the warrior will soon end in the graveyard. You know, so similarly, if we start thinking that the practice of devotional service, the process of devotional service itself is a burden, then we are putting aside our very defenses, our weapons for attacking and our shields for defending. We are putting both of them aside and we will be slaughtered. So, actually speaking, as long as we have our weapons, we may get wounded, but we will never be defeated. A devotee may be checked, but a devotee will never be checkmated. Chakra means some place, you know, okay, this is a block, this is a block, this is a block, but there is no end. A devotee can never be permanently defeated, because Krishna is always there in the heart, and a devotee can always rise, no matter how much the devotee has fallen. Maya can drag us down, but she cannot keep us down. It is we who keep ourselves down. So, we lose only when we lose hope. But when we rise again, with our hope, not in just ourselves, our hope in Krishna. Now, Krishna has hope in us. So Krishna hasn't lost hope on us for so many lifetimes. For so many lifetimes, Krishna has been accompanying us in our heart, waiting for us to turn towards Him. And He has been patient. We discussed earlier how He is ever waiting, ever willing, ever working. So if Krishna hasn't lost hope on us for so many lifetimes, why should we lose hope due to struggle for a few years in one short lifetime? In Kali Yuga, life is short. In one sense, that is a blessing. Because if you just practice devotional service for one lifetime, seriously enough, then by Krishna's mercy, Lord Chaitanya's mercy, Srila Prabhupada's mercy, we can become elevated, even liberated in one short lifetime. So we have to struggle, but it's, relatively speaking, not an impossible struggle. It's definitely a possible struggle, and it's a glorious struggle. Because the fruit of that struggle is going to be eternal happiness. So we should not lose hope, no matter what happens. Srila Prabhupada wrote to one Mataji devotee who was facing some difficulties. And he said, but as devotees, we should not become discouraged. Because we operate on a different platform. Since we operate on a platform where we want to love and serve Krishna. And all the problems, they just come and go. They're temporary. We operate on a different platform. So as devotees, if we look at the world and if we look at the mind, we'll become discouraged. Because if you look at the world, we'll see there are so many opportunities for enjoyment. How can I give them up? And if you look at the mind, we'll see that it's going to create so many problems. How can I keep practicing? How long can I keep fighting? So as devotees, we shouldn't look at the world or look at the mind. We should look at Krishna. When you look at Krishna, Krishna is so wonderful. How long will I deprive myself of His association? How long will I deprive myself of the joy of loving and serving such a wonderful person who already loves me? Why should I deprive myself like this? So when we focus ourselves on Krishna, keep our vision on Krishna, then the mind and the world, they'll still be there, but their power to trouble us will become lesser. Because the more we think about them, the more they get control on us. And they weaken us. But when you think about Krishna, then that gives us strength. And then we are able to resist the challenge that come from the mind and the world. So essentially, when we practice devotional service, it is all a matter of our own determination. It's not that by our determination we will make spiritual advancement. We make spiritual advancement by Krishna's grace. But for Krishna to give His grace, there is some basic determination that we need to have. Just like the person in the well has to hold on to the rope so that the person outside can pull him out. Similarly, we have to hold on to the process of devotional service. And if we hold on, then there are wonderful things waiting for us. Then by Krishna's grace, what will happen is, we will become purified and we will become liberated. Srila Prabhupada describes the purport, and he basically paraphrases the second canto of the first chapter. And he says, the devotee becomes fully enlightened by devotional service, by practice of devotional service. And thus he comes to know the path of the Lord and the way to attain Him. As all doubts diminish, he becomes a pure devotee. So doubt just can be dente ridaya granthis chindyante sarva samshaya shiyante chasya karmani drishteva atmanishvare. So vidyate ridaya granthis, this Bhagavatam section is very illuminating, starting from 1.2.6 to around 1.2.21. Srila Prabhupada has given a series of lectures on this, which is called Dharma, the way of transcendence. And there it is described that by the steady practice of devotional service, the lower modes subside. Then eventually all the attachments go away. Chidyante sarva samshaya, all doubts disappear. And shiyante chasya karmani, one stops doing materialistic activities. And rishteva manishware, one gets spiritual vision. Prabhupada writes, one becomes a pure devotee. This is a time-honored path which many have tread, and by the grace of the acharyas, that path has been laid out for us, which we can also tread, and we can also attain the supreme destination. Agnanaya Suptaraya Smai. We can also pray to the Lord, my dear Lord, please take me on this Supath. Now you have brought me, there were so many paths in this world, and I could have got lost in so many of these paths, but by your mercy, I have come to this Supath, I have come to this good path, this path, supremely auspicious path, which will get me back to you. Now please allow me to move on this path. Please protect me when my conditionings come, when the obstacles come. Let me stay fixed in your service, and by your grace, let me have the intelligence and the strength to keep moving onwards towards you. So by praying to the Lord, seeking his help, and doing the best that we can all become purified and return back to Krishna. Thank you very much. Shri Shobhanishad ki jai. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Gaur Bhaktivinoda ki jai. Nitai Gaur Premanande. Hari Hari Bol.